Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Thursday edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling into the happier happy hour. Introduce you to a guest. You'll all know him in just a moment, but a couple of show notes. Tonight, broadcasting out of the Shaw, a rebrand for the Joel Clayfish hunting cooking product. It's now Raised in the Wisco, baby, and it's going Wisco-wide. Joel Clayfish brings on a co-host, and tune in for that, the new Joel Clayfish, Raised in the Wisco show at 7 o'clock tonight on WAUK 540. And then here in Madison, the live radio premiere of the Empowered Caregiver show. 7 o'clock tonight, Liza Hellenbrand and Kristen Voss, they're going to do their show that's normally played out Saturday mornings, but they're doing it live, so you can call in at 844-967-2789, just like you always could. And we have the fine host of Morning Cannoli, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, all across the Civic Media Network. He's former U.S. Attorney James Santel. And Jim, I want to start today's conversation about a lowly podcaster, in that you are a radio show host like Dom and I. You know, we can look down our nose for multiple reasons at guys like Steve Bannon. Jim, welcome. And gratifying at all, I enjoyed watching Steve Bannon do a perp walk and talk real big with his hands in cuffs.
What one more distinction between the two of you and Steve Bannon, not in cuffs today, and apparently now on the receiving end of indictment for fraud. So congratulations to both of you and most of the rest of America, too.
Well, thank you, Jim, but the day is young.
Jim, obviously the Bannon, it was compelling video and a little bit surprising, maybe, you know, big talker, and then he shows up and he turns himself in this morning. And then, you know, in handcuffs, oh, they'll never take me alive. They'll have to kill me first. No, they won't. You surrendered at the courthouse.
Right. And he says, apparently, I've only begun to fight. Well, the fight isn't going especially well, at least in jurisprudential concepts, because you've already been convicted, as we know, for contempt of Congress, waiting for that sentencing. And now you're facing this indictment out of New York State, a combined effort of both the DA in Manhattan and Letitia James, the attorney general. Again, two felony counts, money laundering, two felony counts, conspiracy, felony kind of scheming to defraud in connection with the We Build the Wall initiative. So he's in a lot of trouble here. And notwithstanding his protestations, which are just for public consumption, we'll see how this plays out in the court of law, as opposed to his outlandish, crazy public statements.
Well, and of course, he doesn't address the fraud, Jim. You know, he's just, it's all about trying to keep him quiet and keep him off his podcast. But how about the double jeopardy thing? How does that not play into this?
Sure. So the answer is this, that as you know, he was previously charged in a federal indictment. And as you know, before that, reached fruition, so to speak, to make this a little bit simpler. We had a president who intervened and granted him a pardon just before he left office. And so the federal case is no longer out there. In legal terms, jeopardy never attached, if you will, in the concept more broadly. And also understand that this is a state indictment, not a federal indictment. That isn't always a dispositive distinction, but here there should be no impediment. That's not to say that his attorneys will not raise that issue once again. They certainly will, and probably that's just good defense activity and argument to make, but it's not going anyplace. And this case, again, separate and distinct from the federal investigation prosecution, which he will never be prosecuted for, this one now effectively takes his place. Same basic facts, same basic fraud, And we can anticipate that the evidence will be pretty much the same as it would have been in federal court.
Jim, new reporting at the Washington Post today. New expanding DOJ investigations, apparently, and new subpoenas issued to a number of lawyers, including Rudy and Boris Epstein and Tonesig, the wife of Joe DiGenova. There's a whole litany of Trump lawyers that apparently might have been, let's just say, grifting, Jim, might have been fundraising on this materially false proposition that the election was stolen from Trump and there was massive fraud or election machines had been overturned or something, you know, that's never been actually proven in any court of law, near as I can tell, Jim. But this expansion of the investigation to the grift, we do know that Donald Trump has raised more than $100 million under a lot of sketchy email solicitations, Jim.
Absolutely. And two things that I see when I look at this reporting again, coming out from a grand jury that under Rule 6C should be secret, but nonetheless, these things have a tendency to leak out, so we can talk about them in this forum, certainly. One of them is that, again, this is a separate grand jury. Can we keep track of the number of grand juries in Washington, D.C., investigating all these things, right? I've lost track myself. I'm not that good at math to begin with. But secondarily, is the point that you're making, which is this was an effort under the Save America PAC to overturn the election, to place him back in office as he recently demanded. And what I think about when I look at this is all those people, that money came from somewhere. It didn't just drop from a tree. You've got an awful lot of people out there who are victims of this fraud. It's not just about these individuals now being summoned and subpoenaed to testify, perhaps as witnesses, perhaps as subjects, maybe targets down the road. But you've got presumably thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people who over many years bought into the fraud that is Donald Trump and sent him money. And that's where this comes from. And that's why I look at this and I think, all those victims out there who gave up monies that would otherwise, who knows, be supporting their families, they're the real story here today, and they should be hopping mad if they understand accurately what's going on here today.
They do not, Jim, or they wouldn't have sent their money in the first place. These are the real sheeple. These are the dedicated cult members. These are, you know, these are the MAGAs, Jim.
That's exactly right. Again, I say that out of aspiration and hope that at some point wake up and realize they've been defrauded. And at some point down the road, if somebody is indicted, they will receive questionnaires from the U.S. Attorney's Office asking them about the extent to which they've been victimized, how much money they send in. Those are their opportunities, basically, to be heard and to be listed on the charter, if you will, the list of people who've been defrauded. They probably won't do it. You're absolutely right, because they believe that all these prosecutions are fraudulent in and of themselves. But they've been defrauded, and that's the reality of what's going on here.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santol, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, joining us. Thank you, Jim, as always. So how honest does one have to be when they're sending out, you know, these kinds of ads? I mean, this is politics, right? I mean, lots of people say lots of stupid things and do a lot of things to try to raise that money. How important are the individual emails? I mean, he was sending out 25 a day, you know, at times, according to the J6 committee, to rack up, you know, $100 million. That's a lot of emails, Jim. How will this work? Will they go through the emails and evaluate each one of these solicitations for their worth and their value and their truthiness? I mean, this is politics, man. People say all sorts of things that either don't end up being true or are blatantly false.
Right. And I think, Dom, you put your finger right on the defense to this, which is that's exactly what is going on here. At least that's what they will say. Listen, we didn't really anticipate that we're going to overturn the 2020 election, but we're just putting together money so that we can support our lawyers who are advancing this theory or these thoughts that we have that may or may not be successful. That might be a tough criminal prosecution to make, but to delve more deeply into the point you're making, I would offer this. If you've said things related to there being an existence, a clear existence of fraud in a particular state or states, and are describing it in a factual way, more than simply, hey, support our effort, be behind us, rah-rah cheerleading. If you're materially misstating the facts of what's gone on here, if you, for example, indicate that there are courts that have found that there is fraud, and we know in Arizona there's fraud, or Wisconsin, those kinds of things, then you've got a stronger case as a prosecutor to say you materially misrepresented to these people, you told them something was materially false, you asked for their money, and they relied upon that material misstatement, that money, then you're closing in on a successful fraud prosecution. But it's not easy. You're absolutely right.
Jim, I know Dominic's dying to move on to the paperwork crimes. The crimes of paperwork, you know, maybe new codes, maybe, you know, just foreign secrets.
Storage difficulties, Jim. It's a storage question. Right.
The special master, the ruling by Cannon, the Trump appointee in Florida, my understanding, Jim, is the Department of Justice has appealed that ruling. I know we're short on time here, but I got to tease it at least, Jim. What was your first gut reaction to the DOJ's filing?
Sure. Again, a tough call to make strategically. One option plainly would be just to let this all go ahead because you want the special master to look at all these documents again and move on. I guess we talked last time, tick-tock. You don't have a lot of time here. I think they're doing the right thing here. They went back to the judge just a couple of hours ago and said, you know what? We're not asking for you to reconsider completely, but we are saying that what you put together is untenable. You can't simply divide out the difference between the National Security Division and the criminal investigation and the threat to America, that those two things are in fact connected. And judge, your order makes no sense. It doesn't enable us to do what we need to do. So it's giving her a chance to try to go back and say, okay, now you've given me a little more insight on this. I'll correct what I said before. But she's got to take that lead. And if they don't, they've said they will appeal the entire thing to the 11th Circuit. And as well they should. And so we'll see how this plays out. But strategically, this is a tough thing to decide, whether you want to spend your time going back to the judge, going up on appeal, whether you just embrace the entire crazy thing that this special master situation is. One more observation very quickly, and that is that this was already set in the search warrant itself. We know that there was going to be a privilege review team. The court already endorsed that process. That's what the government relied on. That's what they have done. And now for the district court judge to say, wait, we're substituting something different, completely, completely untenable.
Jim, could you accurately describe the judge's ruling, the prior ruling, as legally incoherent?
Absolutely, yes. Many other adjectives that I'll embrace. indefensible, unsupported, unprecedented, all the uns.
Come back with us. Unbelievably good guess, James Santel.
There's a good chance I may have committed some light treason.
Steve Bannon.
Right to jail, right away.
The Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Make sure you check us out on the socials, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio, on Twitter at Devil Radio, and certainly on our website, darnwi.com.
Jim, before we get back to the, you know, former president, I want to talk about a judge's ruling against a county commissioner removed from office because, I suspect, Jim, he was convicted as a insurrectionist in the, you know, the legal opinion of the judge. So I want to make sure I forget what state it is here, Jim.
Mexico.
New Mexico. And
Coy Griffin is the defendant, and the exactly. Former county commissioner right up until his prior insurrectionist behavior was held accountable by a judge, and the locals had recalled this guy, and he had won a recall election a la Scott Walker. Doesn't matter how corrupt you are, you know, if the voters support me, means to an end. But this guy was removed by a judge, Jim, and we've seen efforts by everyone from Marjorie Taylor Greene to our friends at the Minocqua Brewing Company against Ron Johnson, Madison Cawthorn, lots of insurrectionists supporting electeds on a federal level. People have tried to ban them from the ballot. Those efforts have failed, Jim. This one successful. Was it the prior conviction? Is that the linchpin here?
It certainly gives it's a first judicial district judge in Santa Fe. His name is Francis Matthew, who did this. And he didn't do it without foundation. I'd say just the opposite. I think you've got it just right. In this case, you don't have to present evidence of insurrection. You already got a judgment of conviction out of the federal district court in D.C. This fellow, this Cowie Griffin, Cowboys for Trump, he leads that. I don't think either one of you is a member of that fine organization, but he's convicted for entering a restricted area. And so the judge can rely on that. He's got a federal criminal conviction for that. And based upon his understanding of what that conviction was all about, he invokes Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which I know you also invoke on a regular basis, and says, you know what, this guy was in fact involved in insurrection. We're going to invoke this and we're going to apply it for the first time in American history and find that you cannot stand for re-election in Otero County in New Mexico. That's exactly what he did. A precedent-setting situation here. Hopefully others will go down the same road as the facts permit.
Jim, some unexpected reporting yesterday at the Journal Sentinel. Oath Keepers identified electeds here in the state of Wisconsin that had been part of the Oath Keepers organization. Jim, in this whole scheme of things, I know there is another rival, inferior news organization in town, not even naming the electeds. These are public figures, Jim. Can you just address the free speech part? Should I be careful about naming these Oath Keepers, these insurrectionist adjacent?
Right. The answer is that you do have a First Amendment. This is what freedom of speech and freedom of the press is all about, my friends, right? And so this matter, again, they have not been convicted of being a part of this group, but it's information that affiliates people who are in elected offices. Is that relevant for the political base to know about, for the electorate to know about generally? Absolutely. What your affiliations are those things relevant in a campaign? Sure they are, not just party affiliations, but frankly, everything from, you know, where you hang out on Saturday nights to the other associations you have. This also should be a part of the public domain. People can make their decisions as they will about whether the affiliation is enough to make them vote or not vote for these people. But those associations themselves, especially since these particular groups, we know they've many of them been charged with insurrection, with conspiracy to overthrow the government. That affiliation is wildly significant, appropriately pursued under the First Amendment and on this radio broadcast and others.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around perhaps for another segment, Jim, because I know we're kind of bouncing around here. I want to drill down on perhaps one of these topics at least, specifically the New Mexico County Court Commissioner, the Cowboys for Trump guy. The court specifically stated, quote, the court concludes that the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol and the surrounding planning, mobilization, and incitement constituted an insurrection within the meaning of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, as you mentioned. The ruling said that this guy helped mobilize and incite thousands across the country to join the mob. Applying these principles, the court concludes that Griffin engaged in the January 6th insurrection. Now, you said this is precedent, and this is the first time in American history. Jim, well, others who were engaged in this insurrection, convicted of this activity, are they now all barred from ever running for office again based on this ruling? How far does this go?
Sure. It is limited in scope. It certainly is as just to Mr. Griffin today, right? And so he is prohibited from running. I think the answer is, once again, precedent and possible reference by other courts, other tribunals out there who say, you know what, we do have a conviction of another person who's also running in another jurisdiction. And oh, wait, back in Otero County, New Mexico, there was a judge who made findings premised upon the same kind of thing under the 14th Amendment. We can do the same here. So it does not prohibit others from going ahead. There would have to be a specific adjudication as to another Marjorie Taylor Greene or other people out there. But it certainly does open the door, and it provides a good, not just a roadmap, because that simplifies it too much. It provides a clear direction about how judges and other triers of fact should look at things. And as we said before, you've got a conviction. What you just read from is basically the things presented as a part of the prosecution of Mr. Griffin. You know they're credible because they come out of a court setting. We've got judges. You've got the adversarial process. Using that and invoking the 14th Amendment, you now have a precedent to do this. for other people, even though it doesn't apply to them today, would have to be adjudicated as to them individually.
But if those folks were already found to be convicted, we have the real estate lady that took the private plane and, you know, gave the peace sign and all that. She's been convicted. If she wanted to run, could somebody, who would be the person to come up and say, you know what, you're convicted, we don't want you running based on this judgment?
Sure, same kind of thing. This was the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. That True. Was a group that came forward as to Griffin. You get the same kind of group to say, you know, we've got a right to have elected officials who are compliant with the Constitution. That group, individuals could do it. Same kind of thing, bring it into court. And again, look to this case as precedent out there for going down the same route.
Folks, we are the devil's advocates. Don't forget, tune in Saturday morning, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Come back, more Jim Santel on this fine show.
Be the greatest night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
The worst day of your life so far.
London's burning! London's burning!
The Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. We got a kick-ass guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Tune in Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network for Jim's fine work, 9 to 11, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. And Jim, there's some breaking news out of the state of Wisconsin. I want to get your reaction to the news that former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, and there should be an asterisk there, he was never elected, he was a wanker appointee, Daniel Kelly has announced his 2023 campaign to run for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That is a pivotal seat, Jim. Obviously, with gerrymandered governance here in the state of Wisconsin, you've got divided governance. If the Dems are lucky, worst case scenario, you got Republicans in charge of everything. And the courts are really the last question. Jim, what do you think about this guy? Did he lose to Kurofsky by 163,000 votes?
He did lose fairly decisively to Jill Kurofsky, again, his most recently seated associate justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And as you accurately noted, it's all about the math, counting the numbers on the Supreme Court. This election is going to dictate a lot. I know we always say that this is the most important election in our lifetimes. That's not true. In this particular case, it does have a huge impact. If, in fact, those who might be more conservative in their judicial temperament, and right now they're holding the majority on the court by a 4-3 majority, if they should give up that majority, it becomes 4-3 in the opposite direction. Many of the things that we have seen coming out of this court could be revisited, including lots of things related to the elections in Wisconsin, gerrymandering, all kinds of things that we have seen go in a different direction. We've seen Brian Hagedorn again be sort of on the fence on some of these things, not all of them, but not a reliable person to be on the side of the majority with the other three. But this is a big announcement today. The election coming up again in the springtime. We've got good candidates, I would say, on all sides. Lots of argument about the kind of justice we want on the Supreme Court. Public should be very attuned to this because it affects quite literally daily things in the state of Wisconsin.
There are two candidates that are already being labeled as liberals: Everett Mitchell, a judge from here in Dane County, and also Judge Judy Protasiewicz. I believe is how you pronounce her name.
Right?
And she is also a district court judge. Is that correct, Jim?
That's correct. She's a circuit court judge in Milwaukee County, right? So you've got Dane County and Milwaukee County, both on the sort of liberal side of the docket, if you will. Yes.
Well, Jim, wanted to get those out there. The thought of the canon, this judge that ruled for the special master on behalf of Trump, and the fact that she is a federal appointee, Jim, that was, what, voted on the bench after Trump lost, that meant she had the complicit vote of every Republican senator, including Ron Johnson for Wisconsin. I'm not clear if she was ruled unqualified by the Bar Association, but many of the judges that Trump appointed post losing the election were ruled unqualified. And this woman, we talked about her incoherent ruling in this case. Jim, it is clearly a partisan ruling. And here in the state of Wisconsin, where we always had something of a corrupted state Supreme Court when Gableman was on there and Prosser was on there, and the others were willing to go along. Jim, it was a terrible time, and I used to think the only fair place to get a ruling is the federal courts. And this is not like when Reagan put a conservative jurist on the court or Bush did. This is something different, Jim. These are unqualified lifetime appointments that have shown their colors, and they're nothing but partisan hacks.
Right. It pains me. It pains me to have to agree with you, because you'd like to think that federal judges, again, on the bench for life, good behavior is the way the Constitution describes it. That means they can stay there until the day they die or decide to resign. They should not be subject to these kinds of partisan inclinations. I agree with you. This order, once again, indefensible and can only be described as a result of a partisan perspective. Eileen Cannon is her name. She did spend, for what it's worth, 7 years as an assistant U.S. attorney in Southern Florida, about two of those in general crimes, five of those in the appellate section. My concern about that is you just don't understand even how the Department of Justice works at that point. And when I see this order, especially as we talked at the top of the hour about this distinction that she says between, well, the criminal investigation by the FBI and the continuing review by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, those can be separated out. They don't have to talk to each other. And of course, as the government said in a pleading just a couple of hours ago, you don't get it. That's not how this works. And it's should be embarrassing to her today to have the government come in and say to her that there is a different structural setup, but that's what they've done, and explain to her how her order makes no sense, cannot be implemented, cannot be done, poses huge consequences, not just for the criminal investigation, but more broadly to the security of our nation. Because right now, wisely, Merrick Garland has said, let's hold off on everything. Before we even figure out these 48 empty folders, for example, how do you figure out what was in those without talking to the very people who seized them? Where did you find them? Near what documents were these located? You can't do one without the other. And I would say that that's one area among many in her order where her lack of experience and her lack of background about how government works, how the Department of Justice works, is really showing. I believe the ABA described her as qualified, which is like giving somebody a C, if you will. You're not unqualified, but most judges get highly qualified, some sort of at the high end of that. This means, well, she's been a lawyer and she's knows some things, and I guess she's okay. The ABA would recoil in horror with that description, but this is not a resounding, yes, she is going to be a tremendous jurist. I would also say somebody who's been out for 12 years, I'm looking for people who have been in practice civil and criminal law for 15, 20, 25 years. Those are the people who appreciate what this is all about. They don't teach this in law school. You don't get it from a clerkship. You don't get it from a few years as a private practitioner at Gibson Dunn, which she was, and then as a few years as an assistant U.S. attorney. This is one of the most embarrassing orders that I have seen in recent judicial history in the federal system, a reason to be highly, highly disappointed and suspect of her.
Jim, we see when we have supposed conservative appointees or conservative elected, like Hagedorn here on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, if they show any judicial independence, if they go with the merits of any particular case and they go against the quote unquote party, the predetermined outcome that only a partisan reaches. But Jim, this is the expectation now of these federal jurists. This is why they were appointed. This is why the Federalists wanted them. This is why they were shepherded through by Mitch McConnell when he had control of the Senate. Jim, this is really going to change the landscape of our governance, because no matter what the Democrats do, it's always subject to a Trump appointee saying we overrule it.
Right. And we overrule it at the district court level. This may well go up to the 11th Circuit. There, as we know as well, 11 judges, by my calculation, six of them appointed by President Trump, five not appointed by him. And, you know, to your larger point, the history of America, I go back to the decision Roe versus Wade. Harry Blackmun, appointed by Richard Nixon, anticipated to be a very conservative justice. He turns around, and again, happens routinely. Others, John Paul Stevens on the high court, they do not turn out to be the conservative, or frankly, not a whole lot of examples in the other direction, but they don't turn out to be the partisans you anticipate. Why? because they don't have to be, they shouldn't be. And they understand, Mike, to your good point, they've got a larger calling. That's what these judges are missing as well, that they should not be deciding cases just based upon what a particular party should be is telling them right now. They've got a larger calling to be about the law, the rule of law, and frankly, establishing her integrity. Maybe at some point she'll be a nominee for the 11th Circuit or maybe even the Supreme Court one day. She's very, very young. She's 41 years old. That's a part of the plan too, right? To keep these judges in place for a long, long time. You don't do that. And who knows what the future is going to bring in our overall climate in America. You don't do that by issuing these kinds of decisions. You issue decisions that may strike people as being contrary to the person who put you there, but because they're nonpartisan, they're premised upon your understanding and the application of the law to the facts. She's not doing that here. And I hope that the 11th Circuit or the panel, when this goes up there, has the wisdom and the breadth of insight to say, you know what, this is too far. This is not something we want to embrace. If it goes up to the Supreme Court, I would hope the same, maybe unwisely, maybe not with a lot of foundation. The Supreme Court would also say, no, you've got this privilege review team. That's what's in place. No need to do any of this. This is just unprecedented. Let the process go forward and let's go back to a normal way, as Dom would often say. Anybody else in this situation would not get a special master. You would not get a private civil lawsuit. You would get a privilege review team. And at some point down the road, when you're indicted, if you are, Dom wouldn't be indicted, but if he was indicted, you would get the chance to challenge this in that forum. That's not this. Not this at all.
Not indicted never again.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Five more minutes in this segment, sir. I mean, so many things I have regarding this. The quote that the judge put in there about reputational damage was one of the most asinine things I've ever heard. I mean, anybody that's engaged, anytime you even get questioned by the police, I could charge reputational damage. But specifically, I got two questions for you, Jim. How can a former president assert executive privilege after he's out? And even if you could, how could one part of the executive branch install or claim executive privilege to another part of the executive branch? It makes zero sense, Jim, and I only took the LSAT twice.
Right, exactly. It makes zero sense. Zero to the second and third degree is still zero, right? And again, so many things about your first comment. Yes, stigma of the seizure itself, reputational harm if this is not conducted properly. All of those go to the point we just made, which is people are subject to searches and seizures all the time, every single day in this country. Nobody gets that kind of consideration. Frankly, if they're concerned about their reputation, they're quiet and they wait to see whether there's an indictment, and then you address it. But more largely, absolutely, this the larger issue that you raise about what she is doing here, it frankly flies in the face of not just precedent, but puts the judiciary in a situation where now there is some precedent out there. I wonder out loud, maybe extending your question, if I were a defense attorney out there in another case in Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Chicago, other places, I would also ask for a special master in my criminal case. And opens up all these terrible, terrible precedents that don't have to be there. None of this, frankly, all of these are forced errors by her. Hopefully she'll see the error of her ways and make some changes before this goes
forced
up to the court.
Forced errors, man. This is exactly what they wanted. She's doing her job. She's doing what they want them to do. I know we're running short on time here. As obscene as this is, I'm down. I mean, I don't see how the DOJ could not appeal at least portions of this somehow, some way. You mentioned that it's a risk, certainly timing of this. If she does not grant their partial appeal and it goes to the 11th Circuit, what kind of time frame are we talking about, Jim?
Yeah, that's the other concern. Again, you can ask for an expedited appeal, and I'd like to think that even the 11th Circuit, which tends to be, as I said, a little more conservative than liberal, would grant this, just knowing that this is a criminal investigation. It's already very unusual that we've got courts involved in a criminal investigation at all at this stage, right? This whole thing from start to finish is very atypical. You'd like to think that they would move quickly on it. But once again, it is not immediate. They will establish a briefing schedule, maybe days and weeks to file briefs. They'll have oral argument. This is not going to happen within a week or two. And that's why Merrick Garland's also got to think long and hard about that process as well. And again, as we talked at the time of our last discussion on this very fine show, we do have, at least in this administration, under the Biden and the Garland administration, you've got more than 2 years to bring these kinds of things to fruition. If there is a second Democratic administration, Merrick Garland number two, that may give you more time, but time is of the essence. All that's got to be strategically a part of the analysis here. Absolutely.
Jim, I'm going to have to tune in Saturday morning, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, not Jim Cannoli, to find out what your opinion is of the apparent nuclear secrets found at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're going to continue, sir, to call them paperwork crimes. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Tune them in Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, right here on the Civic Media Network. Going worldwide soon. Jim, always appreciate when you come around on a Thursday afternoon.
Always a delight, gentlemen. Good to see you, and good to see you again in the future.
Come back with us. Appreciate it, man. The phones are next at 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now. 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank James Santel. Don't forget to tune in for his show every Saturday morning, Morning Cannolis, Saturday 9 to 11. And also, got a little change of lineup tonight. They're calling it something different in the Shaw these days. Raised in the Wisco with Joel Clayfish. That'll go off at 7 o'clock tonight. And here on Devil Radio, the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza Helen Brand and Kristen Voss. And Dom, I got at least one more headline for you and the audience. This one's a little tragic. Trump social media company loses vote to go public, raise money to keep running. Oh no, Truthy Socials going down the pike already?
Oh, what?
Here is what's being reported. I found it at the Raw Story, Dom. Digital World Acquisition Corp, a so-called blank check company, failed on Thursday to garner enough shareholder votes to take Donald Trump's Truth Social public. Oh, I'm sure the public would so embrace it. Let me invest money with Donald Trump. Do you think the timing could have had anything to do with the timing of the DOJ report, of the expansion, of the grift, of the fleecing of the MAGA supporters, or maybe the Steve Bannon perp walk? Any of that factor into this vote of the stockholders, Dom?
Right.
A little bit more here. Former President, this is a quote. Former President Donald Trump's social media company has another potentially big problem on its hands. It's struggling to complete a stock market listing that would allow it to raise $1 billion. It needs to keep running, NPR reported National Public Radio. Trump Media and Technology Group, which includes the Truth Social app it launched earlier this year, had been planning to list on the NASDAQ stock exchange through a complicated process known as a SPAC merger. The Securities and Exchange Commission has yet to approve the merger. Instead of pursuing a traditional IPO, what's that, Dom? An initial public offering, right?
Yes.
The Trump Media and Technology Group decided to merge with a blank check company that had already listed on the NASDAQ. These kind of deals have become popular in recent years when interest rates were near zero. In effect, they give private companies a shortcut to going public, requiring, wait for it, Dom, less transparency than traditional IPOs.
Yep.
Axios reported Truth Social says it currently has enough cash to maintain operations, I suspect they mean, through April of 2023, and that it soon plans to begin generating revenue via advertising. Where do I sign up for that? I want to push this fine radio network on the Truthy Social platform, Dom. You know, Trump had 89,000 followers on the Twitterverse, but on the Truthy Social, 4 million.
I mean, you know, 4 million is still a fair amount of people.
Come on, with a steward like Devin Nunez at the helm, how is Truthy Social not flourishing, Tom?
Because it's Nunez and it's Trump and it's Truthy Social, of course.
Just give
Trump
him a
said
blank
he's got
check.
Enough money, man. Trump, I mean, Trump will go to pocket,
he's
right?
Rich.
I mean, Trump needs
rich.
To. He's totally rich. He'll be so proud. He's so rich. So
no, he's
rich.
Going to the campaign donors, right? Yeah. He's going to the super PAC money.
But
the
at some point,
America
does that
PAC.
Money get frozen? Like, you know what I mean? There's investigations going on. At some point, you freeze that money. If
now,
you
when you go
some...
see Judge Cannon down in Florida.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I'm going to need you to free up the cash because, you know, I got legal expenses. Bills, if you will.
844-967-2789. Crudy, you know I'm traveling next week. I'm going to Europe to visit my daughter, who's studying for her first semester of her senior year in high school.
Very exciting stuff.
In the Czech Republic. It is, and I'm super excited. But I did look. You know, I'm technically like about a nine-hour drive from the Ukrainian border. I mean, everything in Europe is kind of close, right? So you can understand my concern when I see the headline at the Washington Post last night. Ukraine military chief says limited nuclear war cannot be ruled out. So think about, now I'm thinking to myself, well, how much has the word nuclear been involved in the conversation in the last couple of days? You know what I'm saying? Well, what did we find out? Well, Donald Trump apparently has some, you know, nuclear information, defense information about a foreign country, at least one that we are now aware of. And we speculated yesterday a bit, perhaps, could it be Israel? Could it be the Ukraine? Well, I'm starting to think, no, maybe when I said Ukraine, maybe it was Ukraine. Why is Russia there? Why is the Washington Post reporting that this Ukraine military chief warned that a limited nuclear war between Russia and the West cannot be discounted?
Are you
and
sure
why?
You're not Republican, Dom? Because suddenly the thought that this nuclear war, this limited one, could happen to you, it's like it's a big deal if it could happen to you.
Well, I'm going to be a little closer to it than I would be if I wasn't going to Europe, Curdy. But also, on top of this all, yesterday, the U.S. military held a test launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile. On top of this, so
do you
so
want to
have,
play
we can,
a
we can
game
use that Donald Trump has defense and nuclear secrets of a foreign adversary? We know that Russia invaded Ukraine, and we know that we're testing ICBM missiles right now. And I'm just wondering, I have to wonder, and do you wonder, are these things related? Are we somehow now, for reasons unknown to us, because of the former guy's behavior and handling of these kinds of secrets, engaging in saber rattling, whipping it out, as it were, because of the exposure that has been provided because of Trump's actions? I have to wonder, and I do wonder, and I'm very concerned about this. I mean, how do you define a limited nuclear war? Here's the quote. This there is a direct threat of the use, under certain circumstances, of tactical nuclear weapons by the Russian armed forces, the Ukrainian commander-in-chief said in an article published at Ukrinform, a state-run media outlet. It is also impossible to completely rule out the possibility of direct involvement of the world's leading countries in a, quote, limited nuclear conflict, in which the prospect of World War III is already directly visible. When Donald Trump stood up there and proclaimed to the world, no one knows the horrors of nuclear more than I do, I thought it was very strange. But then I thought to myself, well, who is he talking to? Who is he telling that to? Was he telling it to Vlad? We saw how he reacted in Helsinki, man. So, lots of things happening. Google nuclear. It's all over the place now. This week, limited nuclear war, ICBM testing, Trump had nuclear documents. This is all in the last 3 days.
The world would not dare to do something like that. Well, my buddy was traveling in Europe seeing Princess Izzy. I mean, you live the life of Riley, Dom. If something happened, it'd wait till you came back and we could do it on the radio.
Yeah.
Don't forget. Raised in the Wisco with Joel Clayfish, going off at WAUK at 7. And here in Madison, Empowered Caregivers, the first live edition. Give it a listen. Thank you all for listening to the Devil's Advocates. Native Roots Radio is next with Robert and Wendy Pilot.
There's nobody that understands the horror of nuclear better than me.
Just press a button and see.
Yeah.